This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Groz, and Tom. We are live at Seahawks headquarters. A shuffling of the scheduling going on this week since the Seahawks are playing Thursday night here at CenturyLink Field against the Green Bay Packers. Typically, the huddle happens on Thursday, but because of the schedule, the huddle is happening today. But a change to that as well. That will happen at 1 o'clock.
So, I'm so confused.
Yeah. Man. Well, we'll keep it. Just stay tuned. You'll be fine. We'll guide you through everything that's going on. All you need to do is just sit back, relax, enjoy, and listen. So the first hour of the show, Bob, Groz, and Tom. And then starting at 1 o'clock, the huddle, which will feature Rashad Penny.
Be it his first visit with us, I believe. We haven't spoken with him yet, have we?
I can't remember if we talked to him during training camp.
I know
camp
we
or not.
Didn't in training camp. I thought maybe we would have after the draft, but I don't think we did there either.
Yeah, it's hard to remember, but yeah. Looking forward to a conversation with Rashad Penny coming off, obviously, his best game as a pro. And then Doug Baldwin, who we love talking with. And
Doug's like hosting this show.
Should we see what he thinks of the morning show, if his feelings have changed at all?
That's right. I forgot about that.
We'll see how he feels about things since then. Maybe they've mended fences, or maybe he feels the same.
Forget about this playoff race. What do you think of the morning show?
What do you think about the quarterback and the know-it-all? Give us your thoughts. So Doug Baldwin will be with us in the huddle, as well as our cast of regulars, John Boyle, and we'll get Rabel on with us, and an opponent preview of the Packers. All of that will be coming your way, so you're not going to want to go anywhere.
But
meanwhile, we've got things to discuss, Tom, that aren't good.
Unpleasantness, up and down.
And this is it's a really tough one to discuss, not because it's a tough subject matter, but we have very little information. This is the story that came out about the Seattle Mariners, which I'm assuming most people at this point are aware of, that Dr. Lorena Martin, who they brought on staff last year, created a position that didn't exist prior to her arrival, brought her in to help with all the things that have been going wrong before, right? They had just had all of these
health
injuries.
Concerns.
Yeah, just massive injuries and you know, just trying to rectify a lot of this. So it was a position that was created specifically for her. Obviously, it didn't work out. They parted ways in October, and then she came out yesterday on social media to accuse the organization, and more specifically Jerry DePoto, Scott Servais, and Mr. McKay of being racist and sexist.
Sexist comments. And this is stuff that's in some part behind people's backs, and in some cases, it's right to their face.
I guess, yeah. It's just it's a lot that came out, and it's hard. Because you don't know, I mean, it's what she said. Mariners released multiple statements last night calling these completely fabricated, completely untrue. And, you know, so she's saying, here's exactly what I saw, what I witnessed, what happened to me, what I saw happen to others. And they're saying, this is all nonsense. She's, you know, none of this came out until after she was fired, and now she's got issues. So I don't know who's telling the truth. Yeah. You have feelings about some of the things you read. The timing of it doesn't look great for her, I would say. The timing that, you know, this came out a month after she was let go, and there was a statement in the story. We'll speak with T.J.
Cotterill
of the News Tribune, who had a conversation with her.
A lengthy one, if you read the quotes from his story.
Yeah, and talking about, you know, hey, I just could no longer stand for this, essentially. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have it right in front of me. But basically saying she could no longer tolerate it. She had to, you know, let people know. And I'm thinking, well, if that was going on while you were there, and you didn't say anything, you didn't take this stand then, you're sort of complicit, right? If you're watching this, if you're witnessing it, if it's being directed at you. Now, she says she went to HR over some of this, and yeah. I don't know the rules of HR. I don't know if she's now made it public saying, hey, I filed a complaint. I went on record with the HR department and said, this is what's going on. I want this on the record. Since she's brought it out publicly, could the Mariners now come back and say, fine, check that. We'll expose this record public. I don't know the HR rules.
That stuff is on record somewhere, though, whether it becomes public or not. And I imagine if this drags out beyond just, you know, this week or this month or whatever, that probably will be made public at some point. I mean, we'll know. It'll get resolved, and we'll probably know whether or not something was reported. We don't know what was reported, maybe, but we'll see. I mean, there's a couple of quotes that jump out to me, though, and this one right here, it's been torture. I was kind of scared at times. That really, you know, that kind of brings it home to me. I mean, there's comments about a lot of the Dominican players and the coaches, comments directly towards her. If this is true, man, this is just, this is awful. And I'll tell you what.
Well, if it's true, job should be lost.
Oh, no doubt about it.
There's no, to me, there's no debate about what should happen if it's true.
Right. Even some of it. Right. Yeah. Now, I don't like exaggerated accusations either. But even if some of it is true, I think the same principle still applies. As I was looking at Twitter last night, though, and some of just the fan reaction to this, because guys, my reaction is the same as yours. A lot of the time we hear stuff that on the inside, we hear rumblings about who's happy, who's not. I got to tell you, and I think I'm speaking for you too, Bob. I never heard anything about this from behind the scenes.
No.
Nothing.
I haven't heard a peep. I mean, we tend to hear rumblings. You tend to hear, hey, so-and-so said this, or this is going on. And sometimes it becomes public, and sometimes it doesn't.
Right, but just so you don't think that we're on the air here talking about something when we know that something else is true, that's not the case.
No. This was a shocking story. I'm reading this going, are you serious? How is this going on? I mean, I spend a ton of time around that ballpark, talking to people and just kind of being, and listen, I'm not in the inside. I don't pretend to know Jerry or pretend to know Scott or speak to him on a professional level, spoken to him one-on-one, off the record. I've never heard anything like that, and it doesn't line up with who they present themselves to be. I can say that, but again, I don't know them. I don't know how they are behind closed doors and in the heat of things, and maybe things are said. I don't really know. All I can tell you is my interaction with these guys on a number of occasions, on and off the record. I've never seen anything. I mean, it was surprising to read these things. It doesn't line up with who they presented themselves as being.
It doesn't.
So it doesn't mean they could never. They're not capable. All I'm just giving you is my insight and my interaction. It didn't line up. But hey. You know, there are a lot of people that do a lot of things that you would never expect. So
that's exactly it. How many of these types of stories have we seen over the last several years? And when they come out, the people around them say, boy, I never thought that.
Yeah.
I mean, look at, I'm not making a comparison in offenses here, okay? But look at Bill Cosby. Okay, he was like America's dad. None of us knew this. Nobody did.
Here's what I'll say about that is just knowing. You know, and I never heard anything like that. But in talking to, I've made friends with a lot of these comedians, a lot of these stand-up comedians. And apparently that was something that was sort of talked about and whispered about behind the scenes within that community. So that's just among the comic community. I guess it was something that was whispered about. This wasn't the biggest shock in the world. In fact, it was a comedian that exposed him.
That's true. I remember that.
Hannibal Buress. So
I'm just trying to make the point that perception is not always reality ahead of time. But we're not making any judgments here today. We just can't.
Well,
we can't.
I don't have the information. I don't know. I'd never met her. I don't have any sense of who she is as an individual. You know what I mean? I've never spoken to her. It's a bad story, man. It's a bad story. Hopefully that they'll be able to prove one way or the other. She'll have documentation. Say, here, it's right here in black and white. Here's what happened, A, B, and C on this date. Here's the record of it. Or they can prove on their side. Hey, look, here the record. Show me where there was a complaint. Show me where this happened. I mean, there's nobody to back up anything. Somebody's got to prove something on some, because right now it's her word versus theirs, unless there is a record of these complaints internally. But at first blush, you're just going, man, that doesn't sound like these guys that I've talked to a million times. And the timing of it isn't great for her, I would say, because in reading the comments, that's what most people jumped on is, wait a minute, you waited till you got fired and now you can't tolerate it anymore. And now it's become too much to deal with. And,
right. Which doesn't mean it's not true, but it could also. One thing I did want to say about this, though, just going back to some of the reaction I saw last night, I think that, and you guys can think whatever you want for right now, it's fine. But the perception of this team right now and its incompetence and its inability to win, I think is factoring in to whether or not people believe Service and DePoto. Or believe the organization.
That's a big mistake.
I'm just going to say, I think that's a mistake. And if that is your opinion, I think you should at least rethink it. Just because they can't put together a baseball team that can make the playoffs, that really shouldn't have any connection to what's going on here. It really shouldn't. We know plenty of successful people who have gotten themselves in trouble over similar issues. So don't let the Mariners' failures over the last 17 years cloud your judgment here. That's just
yeah. Well, one has
like,
nothing to do with the other. I mean, you know, whether they make the right trade, they ship off the wrong guy, sign this guy. I mean, that's got nothing to do with how they comport themselves behind the scenes, interacting with people on this level and what they're being accused of. So
right, but you know, I mean, for the people who are itching to get DePoto and Service out of here, and all the players. Oh, yep. See, got to get him. No, don't. Go there. I would caution you against that.
Yeah. Well, coming up, we're going to speak with a man who spoke with Dr. Lorena Martin. T.J. Cotterill of the News Tribune will be joining us next here with Bob Grozentom.
You're listening to Bob Grozentom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is Bob Grozentom. We are live at Seahawks headquarters. The huddle will start at 1 o'clock today. Doug Baldwin, Rashad Penny, Steve Rabel, John Boyle will all join us on the program. Right
at
now,
once?
We're at the same time. We're going to all squeeze them into this room. It's going to be amazing. But we're talking Mariners right now, and not for good reasons. The story that came out last night, you had Ryan Divish, you had this man who's with us now on the Venue Kings hotline, all chiming in on this, and he had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Lorena Martin, talking about T.J. Cotterill of the News Tribune is with us. T.J., how are you, man?
Hey, good. How you guys doing?
We're good. This is an interesting, tough story to sort of talk about, because There are details from one side of the story, but I mean, as far as like public details, we don't really know much. We it's all come to light at once, and I'm just curious, you know, before we get into the weeds on this, what was your takeaway? You had a chance to speak with Dr. Lorena Martin for quite a while. When you got done with that, had a chance to process it, what was your view? Did you feel like, all right, this rings true, or this doesn't add up to me? How did you feel about it?
Well, the first part of this is just how difficult it was to try to just wrap your head around all this that happened. I mean, obviously, this is three very prominent people in the Mariners organization that she's making these accusations against. I mean, three of the biggest. I mean, Andy McKay is in charge of all their minor league affiliates, and obviously Scott Service and Jerry DePoto. And I think the most difficult part of this was trying to wrap your mind about the timeline of this, too, because she was hired, and there was a lot of you called fanfare, when, especially internally, when she was hired as this pioneer of her position, that the Mariners had never had this position before. They certainly didn't have anybody else who was a woman leading baseball operations department. She was going to be in charge of a lot of broad oversight of conditioning and exercise and mental skills nutrition and all these different departments. She had an office, both upstairs in the front office, and she had one outside the clubhouse as well. So she was just a prominent figure you'd see so often around the clubhouse too. And this is a position that Jerry DePoto, when he laid it out, that they had spent almost a year developing this position and a year looking for the right person for this position too, when they hired her away from the Lakers. So to wrap your mind around that, you know, she's less than a year into a three-year contract, and now we're hearing that she's terminated, that was obviously trying to get the details of that. And then she's making these allegations on social media, on her Twitter and Instagram. And what I was trying to do is okay, we need details. I mean, obviously you make some generalized kind of statements on your social media. Do you have specific examples of these things? And she went into a really long discussion of what she felt were some of her examples of some discrimination, both racially and gender. And not only for her, but for other Latino players. And obviously, the Mariners are filled with some prominent Latin players on their team. Robinson Cano and Nelson Cruz and Gene Segura. Obviously, Felix Hernandez from Venezuela. So, yeah, to wrap your mind around these people. And I think you mentioned earlier, Bob, that it's you know, when you're around these people in person, it's hard to get that impression. We talked to Scott Service two times a day. We talked to Jerry DePoto pretty regularly, and a couple times I talked to Andy McKay about some prospects, and you certainly never get that, although you just never know. I mean, the other side of it, the private side of these people too. So that's kind of the difficult part of this is obviously being able to wrap your mind around obviously now what the ramifications will be for this too, because obviously if this comes out as what the Rand said is true, that's obviously going to be extremely serious.
TJ, I'm curious, and I'm not sure how exactly this is relevant, but there's so much about perception that factors into these stories, at least from our standpoint, on the outside looking in. When you spoke with her, what was her – I assume you spoke with her on the phone. What was her demeanor or tone of voice? Was she calm, frantic? I mean, how did the conversation sound to you?
I think a little bit of both of those. I think she also seemed kind of nervous, too, and I think frustrated as well. No, it's hard to read in those things because it is over the phone. And like we just said, it's easy to try to read people on the outside and not know exactly what they deal with on the inside. But, yeah, it was, I think, like you said, it's a mixture of all those things. And obviously, it's also curious as to, you know, what took so long for her to come out with this. And I think I asked her that and said, what was the reason for now? Why the timing of this that you would release these now? And she said it started in about January. And you figure if it's January, then and she was hired on November 1st, it's 2 months into her job that they're having these problems. And she said it stemmed over the oversight of the mental skills department, which she in her contract said that it was part of her duties to oversee mental skills as part of nutrition and conditioning exercise. And they wanted to shift that oversight to Annie McKay. And so DePoto met with the both of them. Lorena disagreed with this as part of her contract, and then the ensuing statement she claims were made. And I think it's also important, too, that the Mariners have categorically, their quote, denied that any of her statements are true and that she's fabricating all of her stories. So it's a lot of he said, she said. And so why the timing of this, though? Why now and not earlier? And what her response was that she had told this to HR people in the Mariners multiple times and other staff members multiple times, although the important distinction in that is that she said that her meetings with HR were more informal meetings. Like she met with someone in Peoria at spring training right after Scott Suris said she couldn't come to a meeting because she's a woman. She said that it was more of an informal meeting at like a cheesecake place in Peoria talking to someone in HR. But she said she had other meetings too. Nothing, it sounded like, was on paper formal, which I think makes it also difficult for her case to, and it becomes more of a he said, she said too. So it's a mess, obviously, and where this goes, it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and TJ, you just hit on what I wanted to ask you was, you know, in your story, she made reference to speaking to HR or something. Okay, well, then these encounters are on record. But now you're saying she said, nah, it wasn't really that. It was more of a we were having cheesecake or we were out at a restaurant talking about it. Even then, I would think if she's bringing this out publicly and she's talking about legal action, then these people can be called as witnesses to testify on her behalf, I would assume, right? I mean, I don't know the law, but if you've had conversations with people saying, hey, man, this is what's going on and this is untenable and I can't believe this is how they run things, then that would be a very valuable person to speak with, right?
She also said on the phone that she has people that, you know, would speak on her behalf if subpoenaed. So if this went to the court system, she had people to do that. And she says she has emails as well when asked to bring those forward and that talk about the breach of contract and they were trying to switch the oversight to the mental skills. That part was she hasn't been able to bring those forward yet. And the Mariners also said they had people in those meetings that could say that what Lorena said was not true. But they haven't brought those people forward yet either. It's a lot of moving parts because you have Lorena, she has these people, the Mariners saying that they have their people. But those people obviously haven't been spoken to yet. And there's also been some interesting reporting from both Ryan Divish, the Seattle Times, and Corey Brock at The Athletic. And Corey said they talked to some people in the Lakers who said, honestly, they weren't sad to see her go when she left less than a year into her tenure with the Lakers. But then Divish reported yesterday for the Seattle Times that he had sources say that the two trainers that she said was the big reason why she came forward, she was so unnerved by the Mariners firing two trainers she named on Twitter that she wanted to come forward. Those are both trainers in the Dominican Republic. And the Mariners had denied in a statement saying they fired any trainers, but they didn't renew the contracts of both these two trainers that Lorena mentioned. Now you can do the war of the words whether renew their contract is different than saying they were fired. But like Divish said in his story too, which basically means they were fired. It's a lot of moving parts in this thing, and it's obviously going to be more uncovered as we go.
I was actually going to ask you right there, do you remember hearing about any issues with her prior to her exit? I guess what you just said about the Lakers there, that she may have had some issues there. I mean, you covered the team. Was there anything on your radar at all? Not having to do with the comments they were making, but just her difficulty in her job with the organization.
There were some rumblings of maybe it wasn't quite what they expected it to be. But no one ever said anything like with the team specifically to me. But I felt like you could kind of tell maybe there were some issues. I worked on a story probably in July, right around near the All-Star break, about Felix Hernandez and obviously his struggles, and he had gone through a stint, or maybe he started to look a little better. And I hear that Lorena had been working with him, and that was kind of one of her new projects, was to work specifically on a workout routine for Felix Hernandez. And her job when she came in was, they had so many injuries last year. It was obviously a record number of pitchers and players they used because of all the injuries last year. So bringing her in, they wanted her to help reduce time spent on the disabled list. And so this is part of it. Okay, we're halfway through the year. How's that going? Obviously, the Marathon had to deal with a ton of big injuries. And she said that they had reduced those time by 53% at that point of the previous year. But trying to get the Mariners or DePoto to talk about that, they said, well, we want to wait till the end of the year before we make any sort of conclusions about this. And so, yeah, you could kind of tell that, yeah, they maybe that she was making a bigger deal over it than maybe they thought it was, and they certainly couldn't get any worse in time spent on DL days than they were the year before. But, I think there were some maybe minor rumblings of some disconnect.
Mm-hmm. TJ Conneril of the News Tribune has been our guest here. TJ, great job on the story. Obviously, there's a lot still to be uncovered, and we'll wait till these facts start to come out to really get a grip on how this thing shapes up. But thanks so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. TJ Conneril of the News Tribune with his story. You can check that out and sort of make your own assessment. It's really hard to figure out what side you fall on just based on what's there. There's not a lot of information. There's accusation. There's denial.
I thought, yeah, the hardest part is to not fall on a side.
Well, yeah.
Right? Because you want to, in these situations, you want to choose one or the other, but how can you? Unless you're there every day. If you work in the Mariner organization and you're around these parties all the time, maybe you can sort of start to craft a judgment. Well, I can see this. I can see that. I can't.
No. I mean, I'm around this team a bunch, and I can't. It's surprising. It doesn't sound like those guys, but again, you allow for anything these days. You can't say this guy's never capable of doing this, right, or they would never do that. You just can't say that. But at the same time, there are some parts of the stories that don't sit right. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see before we cast judgment on this whole thing. But stay tuned. Major League Baseball, by the way, is investigating this. They've released a statement, so this is far from over. Meanwhile, two quarterbacks that nobody can agree on. That debate coming up next with Bob Gross and Tom.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is Bob Gross and Tom. We are live at Seahawks headquarters. The huddle will be happening at 1 o'clock today, from 1 to 3 o'clock today. And Doug Baldwin, Rashad Penny will be guests of the program. So make sure you tune in for that. Meanwhile, two quarterbacks that nobody can truly agree on in terms of what they are. Are they Hall of Famers? Are they not Hall of Famers? Do their teams win because of them? Do their teams win in spite of them?
Are they elite? Have they ever been elite? Have we forgotten that they were elite?
Well, let's talk about the first one, the one we watched last night, who put on a show, Eli Manning.
Would you call it a show from start to finish?
No, but that's been his...
Well, it was a show, but maybe not a good one.
But I've talked to you about this over the years, long before you and I were working on the same show together, that Eli had a knack for looking very pedestrian through a game. Just had a knack for just kind of worse. Well, yeah, he could look bad. Any quarterback could look bad, but he just looks sort of pedestrian, average. And then when the game's on the line, all of a sudden there he is, just bing, 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 driving a team down the field. And we saw him do it last night. We saw him do it last night, and then we saw the stat that since 2004 he's got 35 fourth quarter overtime comeback wins.
Right, comeback wins, which is third most since that period.
He's a guy that just doesn't get a lot of respect. And I've always sort of defended Eli, not because I think he's the greatest quarterback. I don't. Mm-hmm. I think he's a very good quarterback. Has been. Is he now? No, he's lost something. He's not the same, but he doesn't have a great line in front of him. He's not surrounded with a lot of talent. Hasn't been. He's never been a mobile guy. So if you don't have a solid line, not a great one, but a solid one, he's a guy that's going to suffer because of it.
That's absolutely true.
But last night, even on the broadcast, and I saw you correct Booger McFarland, who said he'd only gone to the Super Bowl, but he hadn't had What was,
he said that he said that he hadn't
I gone think to
he,
the playoffs.
I think he just misspoke. He said he hasn't made the playoffs in the years other than those Super Bowl runs,
which isn't
that
true.
That just wasn't true. That would imply that he never did any winning in regular seasons other than those 2 years. He made the playoff like four or five other years than that. But what's funny about it is that we're all watching the same games, whether it's Russell Wilson or Eli Manning. Mm-hmm. But people just have such different opinions on what those results are, what they represent. I mean, Eli Manning hasn't won in a long time. He just hasn't really had good teams.
Right.
Right? Russell Wilson has continued to win. Mm-hmm. Right now, I mean, as of right now, this would be his first losing season if it were to stay this way.
Right.
Right? So he's continued to win. The results are there. So I'm wondering, for the people who, I'll say, make excuses for Eli Manning, like I kind of do, like you kind of do, you make excuses for a guy that has basically no offensive line, no protection, and can't do anything. But then you look at Russell Wilson. He oftentimes makes up for that deficiency with his own skills. Like, mm-hmm. he can overcome things that other quarterbacks cannot.
Led the league in touchdown passes last year with
sure.
no running game and no offensive
right.
line.
He's won. He's overcome a deficiency that other quarterbacks wouldn't be able to. He makes clutch throws, he makes tough throws, he does it all, and yet there's still controversy about him too. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand why we can't just give him the credit he deserves. With Eli Manning, I'm borderline on whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. He could be in, he could be out, I don't know.
That's always a tough debate in football because there aren't the hard and fast numbers, and we talk about this all the time. Like, here's that marker. You reach this marker as a running back or a quarterback or whatever, wide receiver, that's a Hall of Fame number because there isn't. There just it's not 500 home runs. It's not 300 right. wins. It's not, you know, X number of hits. You've got markers in baseball that make it a little easier to judge because they've just sort of been established over years, whether you agree with them or not. Football is just kind of, you'll see guys in there where you look at the numbers and go, doesn't look great, but the guy's a Hall of Famer. So it's really, it feels arbitrary on some level in the NFL. So to look at a guy and go, yep, Hall of Famer. Yeah, there's certain guys that you look at and go, well, clearly, as soon as they hang him up, the guy's been one of the greats.
You just know.
Tom Brady, the day he retires, he should go into the Hall of Fame. It shouldn't even be a vote.
Dan Marino made one Super Bowl, lost it. But the numbers, I mean, if you watched his career.
Drew Brees. As soon as he hangs him up, should be no vote, he goes in. But other guys like Eli, yeah, he's a little more of a tweener in my mind, but I think I'd put him in. This guy's won two Super Bowls, and to act like they won in spite of him, you're not being honest.
You're not being honest
if you say that. You're just not. You can dislike Eli, and I get it, fine. You don't like him. But be honest about what he meant and the plays he made within those games, within those postseason runs. I mean, maybe one of the most famous plays of all time, you know.
Probably.
right? Him escaping a sack, which is not his forte, and making one of the most improbable plays with Rodney Harrison in coverage. And I mean, it was just, you know, if not for him, you don't win. He didn't do it alone, but let's not act like he was just sort of a party to it and he came along for the ride.
Was Eli Manning at any point in his career a top 10 quarterback?
Yes. Okay. I would say he was.
I would say he was, too. And I actually don't think that there's much debate about that. I would put him probably like top 8 for about the middle period of his career.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there was a period of time where he was considered one of the elite quarterbacks. He's never been considered the best. And I'm not making the case for that. But I just feel like, you know, we're sort of prisoners of the moment. The Giants have been bad. What, they have two wins last year?
Three, I think.
Two, three, whatever it was.
Three.
I mean, basically, every receiver on the roster was hurt. The line was atrocious. I mean, it was just, you know, there are reasons. Some of it's diminishing skills. Some of it's just diminishing talent around a specific quarterback. So I'm not making the case that he's the best ever by any stretch. But is he a Hall of Famer? In my opinion, I think he is.
If Russell Wilson... So Russell's done a lot of winning to this point.
If Russell's career ended today, I don't think he would be.
I don't think he would be either. I think he probably needs to get to another Super Bowl at least. Or at least put up...
He's going to have to rack up
some combination
numbers,
of numbers and things like that. But I think the funny thing with Eli is he's had the last couple of seasons, 3-13, 11-5, 6-10, 6-10, 7-9, 9-7. If Russell had that many losing seasons strung together like that, the perception would change, would it not?
Yes.
I think it absolutely... I mean, team wins and losses, even if it's not your fault, even if you're playing well within it. I mean, Archie Manning, for example, good quarterback, bad team. Mm-hmm. I think that stuff can affect you too,
sure.
Fairly or unfairly. So you have to keep winning, I think is the point. You just have, even if your numbers aren't through the roof. Your teams have to keep
winning. Then that's where the naysayers will come in and say, well, the team's winning in spite of you. You look at your numbers. You're not being asked to do much. Just don't screw it up. I mean, there are a million arguments, right? If you love the guy, you're going to find a way to spin it. And if you hate the guy, you're going to find a way to spin it. And Eli feels like there have been a lot of people that just don't like him that want to spin it as, yeah, he got lucky, he had those moments, but it was really about the team. And come on, man. Come on. Be honest about what you saw.
Made some pretty good throws.
Last night was a wildly entertaining game, by the way.
The Giants and the 49ers. How was that
on paper, that looked like a pig of a game. Like, I was debating, do I want to watch this?
It was,
all right, I'll watch. And then it wasn't like brilliant from start to finish, but man, you were on the edge of your seat toward the end.
From about midway through the third quarter on, it was a pretty darn good, it actually looked like football.
Yeah.
It really did.
It was very entertaining.
It resembled football.
Very entertaining, and I'm always happy to see the Niners lose.
Boy, but Beckham drops a lot of balls, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he makes catches.
He does.
But he drops. Eli's not putting them where they need to be. I get it. But he drops a heck of a lot of balls, man.
Especially considering how sticky his hands are. It seems like he can catch anything with one hand. But he's got that. He's got those moments. All right. Coming up, a free agent we want no part of. Wait a minute. What? Coming up with Bob Gross and Tom.
It's Bob Gross and Tom.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute.
What?
It is Wait a Minute What with Bob Gross and Tom live at Seahawks headquarters. Coming up at the top of the hour, the huddle will be happening. Rashad Penny, Doug Baldwin will be guests of the program, so you don't want to miss any of that. By the way, as you might imagine, Tom,
what?
Many texts coming in saying, Eli is trash. They were lucky catches. They won in spite of, not because of Eli, and I just gave you his numbers in those two Super Bowl seasons. A total, if you just, the 2 years they won Super Bowls, four games each, he threw 16 combined touchdown passes to two picks.
Is that good?
Some would say that's pretty darn good.
Some would say that.
Yeah.
So what you're telling
completed
me...
Completed 65% of his passes in the postseason 1 year, 61% in the other year.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that before those lucky catches, he actually played well in those other games.
Apparently
that got them to the Super Bowl, and in a position where they were close enough in those games where a lucky catch might have made the difference.
You could call the helmet catch lucky, but he had to escape the sack, make the throw.
He had to have, by the way, he had to have either the guts or just the arrogance to make that throw. Down the middle of the field like that?
Escaping the clutches. I mean, he was down, essentially. They could have ruled him down. But he made the throw.
Yep.
He escaped. And the pass to Manningham was a brilliant pass. Are you kidding me?
He put that right where they couldn't get it.
Come on, guys. Just be honest. You don't have to. I'm not saying you have to like the guy. You can hate him. Sports hate him. Whatever. That's fine. But come on. You're being disingenuous here. You're not acknowledging what you saw.
It's funny that people choose to hate him, of all people. He's just an aw shucks goober. I mean, so what? We need to go after him.
To me, it's just weird.
All right.
It's just weird. All right. I knew that was coming.
That's fine. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know why it bothers me. You're the Giants fan.
bothers me. It hurts me more than it hurts you.
All right. Story number one. We talked about, and I sent you this over Twitter, that it was MLB, their Twitter handle. They did a picture of a diamond, and they put a face at every position, and they called it, what was it, the underrated free agents?
Underrated free agents.
Yeah.
People that are players that won't be on your radar, et cetera.
But that you should be considering. And right there on the pitcher's mound, that gave us both a cold chill, one Wade Miley.
Can you imagine? I mean,
Wade Miley.
Just the idea that a pitcher who had the Mariner career that he did here ended up in a key spot for a World Series contender, a team that came very close to getting there. But can you imagine going another round with him?
Nope.
I cannot. I mean, if that's... Now, here's the interesting thing. We think Paxton's probably going to be dealt, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what our... Let's just say he's going to.
I feel like it's when, not if.
Right, but they're still going to need starting pitching.
Yes,
but they're not going to go out and spend a bunch of money on a high price. So a Wade Miley-type guy might be the type that you bring in. Now, he may actually command a little bit more money just because of what he did in the playoffs or being there. So the Mariners may not even go that high. But that's the type of pitcher we're talking about probably acquiring.
I get it, but it can't be him.
Okay.
It just can't be him. You can't do it. It'd be like bringing, well, no, it's not. That's not fair. I was going to say it'd be like bringing Sean Figgins back.
No, it wouldn't be that.
There wasn't that.
So you know what? His numbers here weren't as bad as I remember. He was 7-8, 4.98 ERA.
He just didn't live up to what he was touted as being.
No.
Right? This big innings eater. He was going to keep you in all these games. It just didn't work. And he found a new scenery, and it often happens with players. They leave, they go elsewhere, and they have success. Jay Happ did it. Justin Smoke. I mean, we've seen it. But the idea that you're gonna make a return visit and hey, look, let's celebrate our new acquisition, Wade Miley. You know, you're already gonna upset people if you rebuild and just sort of go into a season knowing it's gonna be rough. You start bringing back guys that didn't succeed the first time through here. What are fans going to feel then?
Right. And right? If you think you're going to be excited by anybody that the Mariners acquire this offseason, you might want to think again about that.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's probably not going to go that way.
I'm going to guess it won't go anywhere near that way.
Unless you're really just a big Malik Smith fan.
Story number two. And as soon as I saw the headline, of course, I thought of you. Shohei Ohtani is your Rookie of the Year in the American League.
How do you think I feel about this?
I think you're sort of just numb to it at this point, but you were sort of railing against the hype to begin the season. That had you agitated, all this hype put upon this guy, and he's the next Babe Ruth, and blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, his season was derailed a bit by that arm injury.
He's missed 2 months.
But he's also a guy that hit, 20 home runs and did some good things on them. I mean, he kind of lived up to the hype. He didn't have the durability, and we'll see what happens. He's still a really young guy, but in terms of his production while he was out there, he
lived up to the hype for 1 year, which is why I actually agree with the Rookie of the Year award going to him. I thought Andujar or Torres from the Yankees would get it maybe a couple of months ago, but
they got two candidates. They don't need a winner on
that. A couple of those guys actually they fell off a little bit at the end. Shohei played 104 games, or he hit 104 games anyway. The other two, Andujar played 149 games, which is closer to a full season. But, you know, he pitched pretty well. Was he dominant? I mean, I guess he has dominant stuff, but we'll see how he develops. I guess my issue is with the hype. How long is he good for? There's been plenty of guys who have come over from that area of the world who have been good for a little while and then have sort of fallen off. So we'll have to wait and see, and I know that that's not as exciting than to just judge him right now, but I do think he's deserving of this award.
Yeah, for 1 year, this is all you've got to work with to evaluate. He did tonight, considering what he was propped up as being. He lived up to it.
OPS, 925, slug 564. I mean, on base, 361, hit 285. Pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And it really
he's
is.
He's got power, and he's out there throwing 100 miles an hour. And yeah, I mean, we'll see what he's able to do as his career goes on. But for just 1 year under his belt, he did really well.
Yeah, and over a full season, that'll make a big difference, too.
Yeah.
Because the seasons are shorter over there. So we'll see how that goes, both on his arm and everything else. But I think he's deserving.
All right, there you go. Coming up, it is The Huddle. Again, Doug Baldwin, Rashad Penny, John Boyle, Steve Rabel, and Dave Wyman. They're all going to be here, so make sure you stay tuned. That's coming your way next, live from Seahawks headquarters.